Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Yes, Dundalk is a town on the border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, halfway between Dublin and Belfast. So it tells you two things about me. One is I'm used to being in difficulties, and two is that I'm often halfway between a rock and a hard place. So that's as much as you need to know about Dundalk for now. Right, so it's my very great pleasure to be here today, and I'm very grateful for the invitation, actually, because it gives me a chance to talk about people in contact with the criminal justice system as part of this wider discussion we're having. And that's the particular phrase that I want to say, except that it's hard to say it a lot, and that is why we use the shorthand of offender health. But it's a phrase that I don't like, and I'm hopeful we're going to change into something like health and justice very soon into the new regimen. But we're having a few discussions about that at the moment, and I'll let you know. Votes are welcome, and you can always let me know if you've got a better name. Right, so this is our manor. These are the prison and probation service maps for the whole of England and Wales. And the reason I include Wales there is because the National Offender Management Service covers Wales as well, although Public Health England helpfully tells you it's about England, but we will have obviously a relationship with the devolved administration in Wales. And we are somewhat special in England in being among the people in Western democracies who incarcerate more people per head of population than almost anyone else. But the gold medal goes to the United States of America, but we do a very good silver. And that's not actually something we should be too pleased with, because there's quite a lot behind those numbers that tell you about the challenge we're facing in addressing some of the direst health inequalities and opportunity inequalities that exist within our country. So, it's always good if you're doing a public health presentation to start with defining your population, and that's something we learned long ago. And so this population data is from last Friday. It's published every Friday, so you can have a look tomorrow to see if it's changed. But what it tells you is there's a standing population in prisons of about 85,000 people. And that is primarily made up of men. We talked about women this morning. Women form a smaller percentage of the incarcerated estate, but not necessarily a smaller percentage of the number of people in contact with the criminal justice system, and we'll keep talking about the difference between those. You might also notice these strange things like NOMS operated IRCs. IRC stands for Immigration Removal Centre, and there are about 10, 11 of those in the United Kingdom, of which some are operated by the prison service currently and some are operated by a range of other people, and we can talk a little bit about that as well. So the population profile is interesting insofar as that, as we've already said, they're a very small percentage of the total who are women, but we do have an interesting skew in terms of our age, in that the most economically active people tend to be the ones who are overrepresented in the groups incarcerated. We also have had an increase, as the rest of the population has seen, in people who are older, and so prisons reflect the society from which they draw their inmates. About three quarters of all prisoners in the system in England and Wales are of white ethnic origin, but about 13 describe themselves as black or black British. And interestingly, in the last 10 years, the number of foreign nationals in prisons has doubled and now represents 14% of the total population in England and Wales. Those of you who like graphs, this data is just presented there for your information, and you can get these slides afterwards if you want to use them. But the slide I want to stop at is the turnover. If I had a pound for every person who helpfully tells me it must be really easy to work with prisoners because they're a captive population, I'd be rich enough not to live in Dundalk. But the problem is that this is a highly dynamic population, and while they may have a period of time incarcerated the numbers that go through the prison estate are about twice the static standing population, and that demonstrates some of the challenges that we'll just talk about in a moment. Now, the health needs of people in prisons, and I'm going to focus a little bit about prisons for this bit, simply because that's the best studied population we have. The health needs are well understood and well studied, actually. There's a very high burden of certain diseases, including infectious diseases, but also chronic illnesses, mental health problems. There's also people in prison experience poorer access to treatment and prevention programs before coming into prison. And they often have problems with substance misuse, including behaviors around smoking, drinking, and so on. They also have high rates of homelessness, pre- and post-incarceration, unemployment, and lack of basic level of education often. So these are things that are well-known and well-studied, and the Prison Reform Trust published a really good report on those issues in 2006. I'm going to very quickly point out in my brief, it's health protection, so I'm interested in infectious diseases. And suffice to say that we've got real challenges among people who are incarcerated, very high rates of infection with bloodborne viruses, particularly Hep C. And Charles Gore from the Hep C Trust is somewhere in the room today, and he'll wax lyrical about that, I'm sure. But we also have a very high rate of sexually transmitted infections, and these are really significantly higher than peers from the community. The burden of TB is something I'm going to talk a little bit about. Al's story was much too modest to mention his groundbreaking work in this earlier this morning, but I'll do it on his behalf. And it's also important to recognize that people in immigration removal centers are also similarly overburdened with bloodborne viruses, HIV and TB, compared to peers in the community. We know many people in prison smoke, about 80%. Now, that compares with about 20% in the general population, so that's an order of magnitude which is somewhat staggering, and significant levels of alcohol dependence and problem use. And significant levels of drug use. And the other thing that people often forget is people in prison often die of diseases like cardiovascular disease and cancer, and that their deaths are overrepresented among those groups if you compare them with peers, and also they often receive poorer care than we would like to see as a standard. Children and young people, I think the general comment I'll make about that is that it's often the most difficult thing to see, children and young people being incarcerated, but they represent often people with very severe needs, and those that end up incarcerated are often those with the severest needs and the greatest burden of need. So I think there's a particular job of work to be done about addressing those needs specifically. So I've painted a rather grim picture, I'm sure you'll agree, but it's not all grim, because despite the fact that people coming into prison have a high burden of disease and other problems, prisons can represent a health opportunity. Two things to say about that are that, first of all, there is a statutory requirement and a commitment that people in prison and other places of detention should receive the same quality of care as those who are treated by the NHS in the community. And the second thing to say is that if we do make significant health gains in people who are in prison, the benefits are not just retained within the prison walls. They have benefits beyond the prison walls into the wider community. So what's PHE going to do? Well, you heard Duncan Selby, our chief executive, describe some of the work he's going to do, but our mission statement in terms of offender health, or the health of people in contact with the criminal justice system, is that we will work in partnership with health and social care commissioners and service providers to identify and meet the health needs of people in prisons and other places of detention, and that we will aim to reduce inequalities, support people in living healthier lives, and ensure continuity of care in the community. The scope of our work is large. At the moment, the NHS is responsible for commissioning services for people in prison, but not for immigration removal centres. PHE will assume responsibilities along with the NHSCB on immigration removal centres following April. And it will cover all aspects of public health, not just health protection, including health improvement and public health services. But it's important to understand the policy context in which we work. A functioning criminal justice system is actually a requirement of a functioning democracy. We should remember that it's not, we don't have prisons and other places of detention without a need or a reason. A question is often why people end up in there, and those are legitimate questions. But a criminal justice system is part of a functioning democracy. But the people who are detained there, therefore, the state has a special responsibility towards, because they are detained, and there are legal responsibilities that we must exercise. There are challenges because of the nature of detained populations and also the nature of the estate, including different commissioners in different parts of the system. And there are real challenges around things like continuity of care, which is often the most problematic when people leave the detention estate and go back to the community. But the new commissioning context creates opportunities and responsibilities for a range of new health partners. And under the Health and Social Care Act 2012, the NHS Commissioning Board assumes responsibility for services or facilities for persons who are detained in a prison or other places of detention. And they must ensure high standards and quality of care. The benefits of this new system means that instead of having several tens of different commissioners working with clusters of prisons or single prisons, there will be a single national commissioner with the opportunity, therefore, to define specifications of commissioning and quality. There will be several partners within health who will work together, including the Department of Health, who will continue to set health policy, the commissioning board, who will be responsible for designing commissioning specifications and making sure services are delivered, and PHE will have a particular responsibility around providing intelligence, evidence, and data to guide commissioners and service providers. But we will also work effectively with criminal justice system partners, including the National Offender Management Service and the UK Border Agency, among others. There will, however, be partnerships at local level, including with CCGs, police and crime commissioners, local authorities and the directors of public health, and other statutory and non-statutory partners. The role of PHE will be to support this work by gathering and providing evidence and intelligence, and also providing expertise at local and national level, especially around the development of care pathways between detention settings and the community. The resources that I just put up for you to be aware of are not insignificant. The NCB will have 10 dedicated special personnel working out of area teams to support work at local level, and they will be man-marked by 10 similar specialists working out of Public Health England centres, creating for the first time a very effective and well-resourced horizontal and vertically integrated resource to work with offender populations. I'm going to finish by looking at TB as a case in point for some of the challenges and some of the solutions. TB in prison is a real and emerging public health concern. This data is published in a report the Health Protection Agency published just before Christmas, which shows data up to the year 2011. The blue bars represent single cases of infection, but the small purple ones emerging towards the latter part represent defined outbreaks of infection. And as a consultant in communicable disease control, what I'm concerned about is that we're starting to see prisons as a place where TB is transmitted, not just where people at risk of TB come in for care. But the work that Al and his colleagues led, which is still the seminal paper on TB, homelessness, and prisons, really provides some very interesting intelligence on the challenge and some advice on the routes into solving it. The rate of TB in the cohort of nearly 2,000 people he studied generally was around 27 per 100,000 people. But if you looked at subgroups within that cohort, people who were homeless had a rate of nearly 800 per 100,000, problem drug users over 350 per 100,000, and prisoners 200 per 100,000, which is staggering in terms of comparing the rate of infection in these different groups. And what's most interesting, the graphic that I think really is a call to arms for anyone with an interest in public health in his paper, is this overlap between people who are homeless, have been incarcerated, and who are problem drug users, because it is this overlap that is the moment and the place we should be concentrating on addressing the inequalities that are subject of this conference today and the wider concerns we have as a system. So the study showed that TB is a major public health problem in London. 50% of the burden of disease or thereabouts is in London. And particularly among people who are homeless, people who are prisoners, or people who are problem drug users. And as we've learned, many people are all of those things. These people have a high prevalence of disease, which is often infectious. In other words, they're capable of transmitting it, frequently drug resistant, and they often have problems about adhering to treatment regimens and get lost to follow-up. But the key issue here is making sure that recommendations already made about ensuring care is delivered via structured observation is delivered in a consistent and appropriate way. We already have the guidance, we just seem to lack the will or the ability to deliver what we need to do. And when people describe loss to follow-up, one of the things that really we need to focus on is this about the system not being enabled to support people through care once they leave prison, or is it something about the people using the system reflecting on the fact that it doesn't meet their needs, or both? So there's something we need to think about. But the opportunity in the changes in the public health system in making directors of public health part of the local authority now mean we can look at ways in which working with housing officers and housing associations and so on, we can really tackle this in a sort of coherent and consistent way. So to conclude, people who spend time in prisons and other places of detention are not prisoners or detainees. They are people who spend a proportion of their life, and usually a small fraction of it, in those settings and spend the majority of their life in the community. They often face severe and multiple health and social problems, including homelessness or insecure accommodation. The formation of PHE and the reorganization of the NHS and public health services actually gives us an opportunity here, maybe of a lifetime, to address this in a very ambitious way. So we need courage, we need imagination, we need vision. But tackling public health problems about the so-called hard-to-reach people in prisons could have significant public health gains, not just for them, but for the whole community. Thanks.
Eamon, thanks very much for that. Do you mind taking questions just now? Questions from the floor, please. In the front row.
Hi. I'm Philip Timms. I'm a consultant psychiatrist from South London. I work with a mental health outreach team for homeless people. Notice right that you'll be taking over the responsibility for health care of people in police cells?
Yes.
Right.
Well, the NHS CB.
Yeah. I suppose it's not a question as much as a heads up. You probably know people detained by police on Section 136 are to be taken to a place of safety. Good practice has generally been felt that it should go to a specialist ward for proper assessment. We're finding that these, because of recent cuts, 136 suites are blocked up and police are being turned away with their unfortunate clients, I suppose you'd call them. And so this is a heads up, just to keep an eye on that, please, because it's becoming very unsatisfactory. Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, Eamon, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure.
Who's in charge of the health of prisoners in the country?
Well, today, the people who are in charge of the health of people in prison are the NHS in the form of PCTs. But from the 1st of April, it will be the National Health Service Commissioning Board who will be the people who commission services right across the detention estate. So they are the responsibility of the NHS, first and foremost. And it's my ambition to see NHS logos on the side of every detention setting we have in the country to emphasize that these are patients of the NHS, not just detained at Her Majesty's pleasure.
Well, the reason I ask is I know the British the prison service, the health service in the prison, is the oldest health service in the world, wasn't
yes.
it? Until 2006 when PCTs took over. But, you know, to be honest, PCTs didn't really know what they were taking over, did they? So do prisoners have to register with GPs? Is that the way it's going to work?
Well, prisoners de facto are GP patients when they're in the prison, because prisons have primary care services. The challenge has been that they often are high consumers of primary care services in prisons, and when they go back to the community, they fall off a cliff. And Al used an analogy this morning, and that's sort of very true of prisons. So they are responsibility of the NHS, they're entitled to the same level of care, etc. They often receive that care to a higher standard in prison, and then when they go out of prison, this is where often problems begin for them. So they are NHS patients, full stop.
Thank you. Is there a last question for him? Yes, please. Just.
There are two, is that possible?
Stand steady, Stan.
Hi. I'm Simon Tickle, a GP who works for homeless people and socially excluded in Northampton. You said in your slides, and you sort of implied just now, it's sort of complex reasons why people who are in prison don't engage with NHS services when they come out. It's not complex at all. NHS services in hospitals do not communicate with the outside world. Can you do something about it? I have to contact prisons regularly on a Friday afternoon when my patients turn up with no documentation, no communication, and yet their release has been planned for months. To be fair, there is a complication because people are often released when they're on remand and they're released by the courts, and it is difficult, I know then.
Yes.
But I think there are ways around that too, and nothing is done about it.
Well, I totally hear what you're saying, although I disagree with the inference that nothing is done. We've recognised for a long time that planned discharges need to include ensuring that health and other care needs are met. And the truth is that some people and prisons do that very well for some prisoners, and that as a whole system we need to improve. But there is a responsibility and onus on the NHS to work collectively right across the piece. And this is why I keep coming back to this sort of cliff edge analogy, that things work within the prison estate. We move prisoners around the estate with their medical records following them on system one and other ways of doing this. We tried to do similar IT jiggery pokery with the rest of the connecting for health stuff, which didn't seem to work. But there is a real value in having people try to plan discharge effectively. The other important part of it is to say that prisoners and ex-prisoners need to be empowered users of the health system themselves. They need to know how to use it, how to operate it, and that's an important job of work as well. So we're not blind to the problem, we're absolutely focused on it, and there's some specific work streams we're going to be taking forward to try to address it. But it's complex insofar as there are several organizations and several parts of different organizations involved, and getting them to work together is what's complicated, but the solution's easy.
I mean, I do appreciate what you're saying, but it does seem it's taken such a long time for anything to happen. And I mean, our practice has been in looking after most of the released prisoners, say in Northampton, for the last 10 years, and yet we have no communication or no reciprocal type of relationship, and we'd be very welcome to introduce that, you know.
Okay.
Can I move on? And thanks very much, Eamon. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.